Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
John Feinstein is with us, and Chad, we must begin with LeBron James.
We must, indeed. So, LeBron,
Chad, I thought you were going to start with a Sam Querrey question.
Yeah. That's John, you ruined our tease for the next segment. We're going to start the next segment with all the Sam Querrey questions, all the Sam Querrey queries that you can handle in the next segment.
I'm going to try to get online so I can listen.
Oh, John. So let's start with LeBron James. LeBron, the Laker now. What your initial thought when you saw that move? I don't think anyone was that surprised based on what everyone was predicting.
Yeah, I think just as a New York Islander fan, I wasn't shocked yesterday when John Tavares left for Toronto, and that meant a lot more to me than LeBron James going to the Lakers. But I think we all saw this coming. I think LeBron James felt that his run in Cleveland was over. He did a Herculean job of getting them to the finals this year, and then, of course, they got swept. And he wanted to go someplace and start anew. He owns two homes in L.A. His wife apparently likes it out there quite a bit. And the Lakers have a lot of work to do, though, to make themselves a championship contender. They've been a bad team the last 5 years. They won 35 games last year, and I don't know why, but nobody seems to be talking about what do they do now with Lonzo Ball, because he's a guy who needs the basketball to be effective, and if you're on the same team with LeBron James, you're not going to control the basketball. And this is when Magic Johnson's work really begins. I mean, getting LeBron James to come out to the Lakers, I don't think was that difficult a job for Magic, but putting a championship team together around him will be the challenge that he now faces.
John, I mentioned earlier, it's hard for me not to read into the fact that he signs a four-year contract. I know the last year is a player option.
Right.
But all he was doing in Cleveland was he would sign a two-year agreement with the player option after year one. What did it tell you that he's giving this at least a three-year stay in L.A.?
Well, I think a couple things, Jonathan. One, that he understands that they probably can't put together a championship team next year. Whereas when he went to Cleveland, Kyrie Irving was there. They got Kevin Love the summer that LeBron came back. And they had a team that was a championship contender right away. I think he understands, look, they've got some good young players. Ingram is a good player. Lonzo Ball is, if not a good player for the Lakers, someone who can be part of a package that could bring good players. Obviously, there's talk about Kawhi Leonard perhaps coming there, and maybe with LeBron to kind of raise him, make him act like an adult. That might work. Who knows? But I think, he's going to be 34 in December, and he's thinking this is probably where he wants to end his career. Now, he'll be 36 when he has the out in 3 years, 37 if he plays to the end of the contract. Now, on the one hand, you say 37, he came into the league in 2003, that might be the time to exit, but he's got Superman's body. He might play till he's 40 or 41. So this isn't necessarily the last contract he signs, although it's possible.
We all know that the players control pretty much everything in the NBA, and what Kawhi Leonard is doing with the Spurs, essentially not even willing to discuss anything with him, just that he's done, he's out, he wants to be traded. It's put the entire league in a weird situation. And now with LeBron signing with the Lakers and knowing that Kawhi Leonard wants to end up with the Lakers and the Spurs have to know that. Maybe the Celtics can offer more. It's a mess right now with Kawhi Leonard. What do you think about that whole situation and how this thing eventually shakes out?
You know, here's the thing, Chad. Kawhi Leonard is a very good player. But last I looked, nobody died and made him David Robinson or Tim Duncan. He's a very good player. I would be suspicious if I was Brad Stevens and Danny Ainge, if I was Magic Johnson, about a guy who doesn't want to play for Greg Popovich. Give me the list of players in the last 20 years who didn't want to play for Greg Popovich. Okay, I would want to know more from Kawhi Leonard and from Popovich, frankly, about why this relationship went off the rails. It's not like Pop is a guy who players didn't like. Pop is kind of the ultimate player's coach. I mean, Steve Kerr, who's now considered the ultimate player's coach in the league, partly because he's won 3 titles in 4 years, will tell you Popovich was his role model, that he learned from Popovich, and he models himself after Popovich as a coach. So as talented as Kawhi Leonard is, and he's still a very young player, I would be a little bit hesitant about making a big, because you're going to have to give something up to get him. He's not a free agent. So I would be kind of hesitant about, do I want to give up some good talent to get a guy who can't play for Greg Popovich? That would concern me.
So LeBron to the Lakers was not a surprise. I thought Paul George staying in Oklahoma City was a big surprise.
Yeah, I was surprised when he opted out. I honestly thought he was going with LeBron to the Lakers. That's what he's talked about for 2 years. That's why he pretty much forced the Pacers to trade him, a deal that's turned out great for the Pacers, because Victor Oladipo was the most improved player in the NBA last year. And I think Sabonis has tremendous upside. He's only 22 years old as a young center. So the trade worked out fine for the Pacers. But when he forced that deal with 1 year left on his contract and then announced he was opting out, I figured it was to go to the Lakers. As it turned out, it was to get a long-term extension from the Thunder. But where are the Thunder now if they can't figure out a way to get rid of Carmelo Anthony? I mean, if they learned anything last year, it was you can have Russell Westbrook, you can have Carmelo Anthony, and you can have Paul George, but you can't get out of the first round of the playoffs. And something's wrong there. That means something's wrong. And I think what's wrong is Carmelo Anthony, because based on his track record in the NBA, he'll always put up numbers, although he didn't put up great numbers last year. But he'll put up numbers. He just doesn't win when it matters. I think he's won, what, 2 or 3 playoff series in his career?
Yeah, yeah. And you know what, John? I was thinking about this last night. Everyone's debating if Paul George made the right decision and how dare he turn down a better offer. If he would sign a 2-year agreement, he could become a 10-year player, which would allow him more on a max deal instead of signing for 3. But instead of seeing the super team formed with LeBron James and other players could do the same thing, he decided to stay in Oklahoma City. I wish more people would point that out about what George did.
Yeah, and again, it not only, you're right, Jonathan, is it a surprise, but it goes against what's become the norm.
Right, yeah.
The norm is you're looking for the max money whenever you can get it, and you're looking to sign on in a way that you can be part of a super team. Now, people will say, well, they've got 3 All-Stars. Yeah, but again, it's really 2 All-Stars plus a guy who's had All-Star numbers. Carmelo Anthony couldn't guard any of the 3 of us, has never made any attempt to guard anybody. If I'm putting together a team with the hopes of winning a championship, if I'm Billy Donovan out there in Oklahoma City, I got to say to my bosses, you have to find a way to get rid of him, even if you have to buy him out.
John, I normally am against the idea of reacting to a big news headline for a league and deciding to do something moving forward just based on that one thing. But I think it's interesting that all 7 of the current players who won an NBA MVP, they all play in the West now. Yep. There's only 1 player currently on an Eastern Conference roster that has made a first-team All-NBA. That's Joakim Noah with the Knicks. Dwayne Wade and Dwight Howard are free agents currently. All others are in the West. Should the NBA consider the 1-16 seeding for the postseason instead of the conference 1-8?
I've advocated this for 5 years, at least. I don't even remember when I started advocating this, because the West has been so dominant for a long time now, longer than 5 years, probably closer to 10. And we all say that the pendulum swings, and it probably will at some point, but the only reason not to do it would be logistics, that if you have a first-round playoff series between the Celtics and the Clippers, let's say, that could be difficult logistically. But given the way the NBA stretches out that first round, there's always at least 2 days between games when teams are traveling. After games 1 and 2, when they travel to the other team, that it's not that hard. And sometimes there's 3 days, by the way. So I believe it can be done logistically. And, you know, if you got a coast-to-coast series, you give them an extra day, which they do sometimes anyway. And maybe for the first round, you consider going to a 2-3 system rather than 2-2-1. Although what I would do, if I did that, I've always thought they should do this in five-game series, make it 2-3, but give the higher-seeded team the option. Do you want to play the first two games at home or the last three at home? Give them that option. That would sort of add an interesting twist to things, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
And there's no reason not to do it. There's absolutely no reason not to do it. And the fact is that as great as LeBron James was in these playoffs, the Cavaliers were at best the third best team and maybe the fourth or fifth best team.
John, Serena Williams has concluded, based on an article written about her, that she's tested more often than her female and male counterparts. Roger Federer chimed in on drug testing in tennis, that he's got concerns about the inconsistencies of the places where they test. Some of Serena's details were that, you know, they showed up 12 hours early to her hour window that judged her to have missed the test. What you're thinking about how she's being treated, if she's being tested more often, and the drug testing works of tennis?
You know, drug testing is so inexact and in all sports, and it's clearly not perfect. There are issues with it. And when you do it on a random basis, which is really the only way to do it, there are going to be times when players or athletes feel like they're getting the short end of the stick. I remember a few years ago at a golf tournament, one of the guys in the field, I'm blocking on who it was now, was not a big name, was tested 3 days out of four. It was just random. You know, they tested him Thursday, and I happened to be staying there Friday when they came and said, oh, we're testing again. And he said, yeah, you tested me yesterday. Well, you got drawn again. And then I found out later he was tested again Sunday. Pure fluke. Then the guy might have gone 6 months without being tested again. And there is a reason for off-site testing, because if you don't have off-site testing or off-season testing, which a lot of the team sports do not have, then guys can, you know, cycle their drug use with the advice of good doctors so that they can take the drugs, build themselves up in the off-season, and then not test positive. It's really such an inexact science, Paul. I don't doubt anything Serena's saying. I don't doubt anything Federer's saying. I just don't know that there's a way to get it exactly right. And honestly, and this will make me sound unfair, if they're going to err, I'd rather that they err on the side of over-testing rather than under-testing.
All right, Sam Querrey. Time to get to the Sam Querrey talk.
Thank goodness.
Give me some hope, John, for American men in this Wimbledon tournament. Querrey, Isner, Johnson, someone that can make a run in this tournament.
What's your definition of a run?
Semifinals.
Yeah, I mean, Querrey made the semis last year. He got lucky. He faced an injured Novak Djokovic in the quarters, but did beat him. And all three of those guys you mentioned are big servers. So their best chance to advance deep is going to be at Wimbledon. I think Isner's been in the quarters a couple of times. I think this men's draw is a little bit more breakable than in past years. There's no Andy Murray. Djokovic is still a question mark. Federer, as great as he is almost 37. He's human. I mean, he did lose to a guy named Borna Koric on grass at Halle in Germany a couple weeks ago, which was surprising. He's still the favorite, don't get me wrong. And you never know what Nadal's going to do on grass. He's been good enough to win. He won that classic match with Federer years ago in the final. But I think every one of those guys I just mentioned, even though they are the favorites, Murray, obviously, but those three guys are still the favorites, but I think they're all beatable. Stan Wawrinka's been hurt. He's done nothing for a long time. So I think there is a little bit of hope, not so much necessarily for the Americans, but for all of the lower seeds. You know, a guy like Zverev from Germany, who has played so well but can't seem to get much done in majors, sooner or later he's going to break through, or a Dimitrov, or even a guy like Kyrgios, who if he gets on a good run can play with anybody. So will I be shocked if all the Americans are out by the quarterfinals? No. But would I be shocked if one of them made the semifinals? No. How's that for a good Billy Martin answer?
Perfect.
John Feinstein with us on the Midday 180.
So there's a poll out, John, in I think it's released by the Texas Tribune. According to that poll, Texans have just a 26% favorability rating of the NFL. Texas, which is everybody always thinks the heart of football in America. If this is a credible entry, what do you take away from that?
When was the last time the Cowboys won the Super Bowl?
Yeah, it's been a while.
1996. And the Texans have never won one, of course, have never played in one. I think that's a factor. I think also when we think of Texas as the heart of football, you guys know how big high school football is there. You know how big the stadiums are. I mean, Friday night lights shone a light on the obsession towns have with their high school football teams. College football is, of course, very big in Texas, too, but probably not a fluke because I don't know how the poll was done, but the University of Texas hasn't been very good in recent years in football, and that probably affects the overall outlook people have in the state about football. Now, I don't know what they were asked or how they were asked it that stat comes back, but usually people, like, let me put it, you guys will understand this. If you were to do a poll on what's the most popular sport in Washington, D.C. right now, promise you'd be hockey.
Yeah.
Because people jump on board with winners. We all know that.
What do you think of the Caps post-Trotz?
Well, everybody in you have to understand, Paul, if the Caps hadn't made at least the finals, they were going to fire Trotz.
Yeah.
He was in the last year of his contract. There was a lot of feeling within the organization that he was a good coach, but not a good enough coach to win a Stanley Cup. He certainly proved that wrong. And they've got this guy, Todd Reirden, who's a young guy who they like, who they think is ready to step in and be a head coach. Ted Leonsis doesn't like to pay his coaches a lot of money. One of the reasons he kept Ernie Grunfeld around as his general manager and for the basketball team all these years is he hasn't had to pay him as much as he might have to pay to bring in a big name general manager. So when Trotz wanted Stanley Cup money, Leonsis and Brian McClellan basically said, adios, and we've got Todd Reirden waiting. I think re-signing Carlson was obviously the most important thing they had to do this offseason. But I'll tell you one thing, and check with me in a year to see if I'm accurate at all. Losing Brooks Orpik is a bigger deal than people know. There are certain guys in team sports who are glue guys in a locker room. And it doesn't matter whether Orpik, he hadn't scored a goal for over a year when he scored that goal in the finals. It doesn't matter. Brooks Orpik, I got to know him some when he was in Pittsburgh and a little more here in Washington. He is a glue guy. And I promise you, they will miss him at least as much in that locker room as on the ice next year. And we'll see how that plays out. Just as I think the Nationals have a better chance if they can get their act together and get to October to do well without Jason Worth than with Jason Worth. There are certain guys who are really positive guys in clutch moments for a team and certain guys who are not. Orpik was very much a positive guy in that Washington locker room.
John, I fully acknowledge this could be me being overly cynical with this next question. And I admit I did not see 1 second of the match. But when I see that Russia somehow upset Spain and this miraculous run and this ascendant soccer program with Russia, and it happens to coincide with the year that they host the World Cup, I immediately think something's amiss.
Well, I'm glad you brought up Russia beating Spain, because I need to ask Paul a question here in a second as a soccerista. It does happen, Chad. I mean, South Korea made the semifinals, what was it, 2002, Paul,
yeah.
I think, when they hosted. And playing at home certainly helps the team. But I watched part of that game. And I'm not sure Russia crossed midfield in the last, hour, including the last 30 minutes of regular time and the 30 minutes of extra time. They were just waiting and hoping to win in penalty kicks. Would you agree with that, Paul?
Absolutely. Spain's possession was incredibly dominant.
Here's my problem and my question. If we're going to take the World Cup as seriously as the rest of the world insists we should, and as many Americans now insist we should, how the hell can you decide championship matches, knockout matches, on penalty kicks? Both matches yesterday were penalty kicks. You've got to find a way. Russia, once they scored that goal to tie the game, they knew they did not have to score again and could win the game. That should never be the case in championship play in any sport. It's like, you know, when you in hockey, it's okay, fine, you have the shootout in the regular season. But when you get to the Stanley Cup playoffs, you're playing until somebody scores the winning goal.
It's a flaw in the game. I just don't know what the alternative is because you can't continue to play. They're out of gas.
The people that paid all this money need to come out, whether it's taking guys off the field and playing 10-on-10 or 9-on-9 or whatever it might be, or just saying you got to play till somebody scores. And I know that causes attrition, and it makes it harder for the team that advances because they're going to be tired. Maybe you can use more subs as the game goes on at certain, you know, after 15 minutes, you can use an extra sub, after 30, an extra sub, whatever. I can't take a sport seriously when you can win without scoring a goal.
But for Chad,
you can win
on the
without scoring a goal, Paul.
For Chad on the conspiracy side, I just don't understand how Spain would ever be complicit in something. So,
no, I'm
thought
not
the same about
Chad,
the Chicago White Sox in 1919.
What?
I said we thought the same about the Chicago White Sox in 1919, but you never know.
That's right. You know, and by the way, for the record, I was not around for that World Series. Okay, just so
Shoeless Joe, I thought that was one of your books.
Joe Jackson was a hell of an interview, by the way. Yeah. But the other thing is, Paul, at the very least, the championship match should be played until somebody wins. Because it doesn't matter, you know, when that match is over, the tournament's over.
Yeah,
why
should
the
lengthen
hell would
overtime
you decide it with penalty kicks?
I'll agree with you on that. They should lengthen overtime in the finals.
Lengthen it. You play till somebody wins. That's what they do in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And is there a better postseason in sports?
John, swim until somebody tells you to stop.
I try to.
That's kind of what you're saying. Well, no, you have to go. I'm not going to accept it until you win the race of the distance I set at a random length.
Yeah, I mean, it can't be like if I'm swimming 100 fly against somebody and we tie, right? Now, in the Olympics, by the way, they have a swim-off if it's for the last spot to get into the finals. You swim off if you tie it to the hundredth of a second. So it would be like saying, okay, what we're going to do now to break the tie, you're both going to get up on the blocks and we're going to have five judges come out and judge who has the better start.
John, as always, thank you. You always bring it. We appreciate that. We'll catch up with you next week.
Look forward to it, guys. Have a great 4th.
You too. Happy 4th of July to John Feinstein and to everyone coming up this Wednesday.
America.